And now for reading and writing and radio.
The lumberjacks were noisier than at noon. The meal was half over when an explosion rocked the dining room. Mama dropped a platter. It broke, and creamed salmon splashed on the floor. The men roared, and Davy Dawsey tumbled off the bench. Firecrackers and matches fell from his pocket. "Davy Dawsey, don't you ever do that again," Mama cried. Davy looked up meekly from the floor. "Just as you say, not as I care." "Now clean up that mess." Mama marched to the kitchen, muttering again, "Tough as tripe." "He's gone outside, Mama. He's not cleaning it," Libby reported on her next trip. "Then it will stay there until Davy Dawsey wants to eat again." A moment later, louder shouts of hilarity filled the room. "Land sakes, he's fetched Hiram from the barn. That Davy Dawsey, you can't be mad at him. He's too comical." Davy guided the great white pig to the accident, and Hiram snorted and grunted as he ate up the creamed fish.
The author of that fictionalized history is Jacqueline Jackson, but it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
At the university where I teach, a professor just gave a course that he called Biography as History. It included reading lots of biographies, but also each student wrote a biography, generally of some older person. We have a different professor who, teaching a course in American history, sent out his students to find out about the Great Depression of the early 30s, by talking to the people that were living then. Everyone had a story to tell, and the students brought in these stories about the Depression. What better way is there of learning about history than by talking to the people that have actually lived through it? I read to start this program a little section out of The Taste of Spruce Gum, and that book is a biography of sorts. Where did I get the idea for that? I got talking to an elderly woman, and she began telling me the stories of what had happened to her when she was a bride on top of Shrewsbury Mountain in Vermont in 1903. And I got so interested and so excited in listening to those stories that I decided that they ought to go into a book. Now, I changed it into fiction. I made up an 11-year-old daughter, and I made up some scenes, but lots and lots of the scenes in that book and the whole setting itself were as close to what actually happened to Grandma Vi up there on the mountain and to the situation in which she was living as I could possibly make it. And the details I got from her. There was a logger up there named Davy Dawsey, and he did set off firecrackers in the dining room, and he did bring in the great white pig Hiram to eat the creamed salmon that had been splashed on the floor. That was such a good story that I wanted to use it. And if you read through The Taste of Spruce Gum, a lot of those good stories were there because I didn't want them to be lost. They were just too good not to be saved for people to read and to enjoy. You can also figure that that book is a history lesson. This is the way it was on top of a mountain in 1903 in a lumber camp. Maybe every lumber camp in Vermont wasn't like that one, but this tells you what a particular lumber camp was like, and it gives you an understanding of 1903. It also gave me an understanding of what life was like then, because I didn't know anything about 1903 when Grandma Vi started to tell me her stories. Since that time, I've been alert to stories that other people tell. I've sought out stories, and I have regretted missing certain stories. For instance, I learned that there was a woman in the town in which we were living who had come over from Europe and had worked as a child in a textile mill when child labor was still in use. And from the time she was 7 years old, she was working at the machines in the factory. And I thought, I'd like to go and talk to that old woman and find out what it was like to be working for your living when you were only 7 years old and 8 years old. It was probably pretty grim. But I never saw her, because very shortly thereafter she died, and I've regretted that I missed hearing her story about her own childhood. However, I have asked my parents about their childhood. I wished I'd started asking sooner, but when I finally discovered that I would like to know, I began asking specifically and taking down stories. There's always, of course, some family stories you hear, but you can get many more family stories if you start asking particular questions and get them going. I've taken down a lot of stories about when my father was a little boy. And when he got telling me about his childhood, it began including other relatives. My great aunt Lillian, who was his aunt Lillian, and who turned out to have had quite an exciting life, for a while anyway, as a telegraph operator for the railroad. And she would go every day to her little office out there on the tracks out in the country and would be in there operating the telegraph that would be taking care of the comings and the goings of the trains. And she was lonesome out there, and so she had a pet blue jay that she took with her. And this pet blue jay had all sorts of adventures and stories that I heard, and one that I recall liking very much was that whenever he became too obstreperous and was bothering her, she would throw a handful of straight pins onto the floor. The blue jay would not stop until he had picked up every straight pin and with his beak curled it into a little ball. So picking up straight pins would keep that blue jay occupied for hours. I feel I know him. I think the most vivid picture of my aunt was that down the tracks a little ways was the waiting room, and there was a stove in there, and it was my aunt's job to keep that stove going and warm during the night and the day so that people that would come to wait for trains in this little crossroads setting would be able to stay warm. Well, she went down there one night to kindle up the fire, throw a log on, and discovered here sitting in the waiting room were 10 or 12 hobos. Hobos used to go along the railroad tracks catching rides on freight trains. I don't know if there's very many hobos left, but here were these 12 hobos sitting there, and my aunt, who was a young woman, sort of swallowed, and then she said, will you gentlemen please keep the fire going all night? And the men said yes, they would, and so my aunt returned to her little telegraph booth up the tracks, and the next morning, she said, all 12 of them filed out of the waiting room where they had slept all night keeping warm, and as they went past her little station, one by one, they lifted their hats and put it back down onto their heads and then filed on down the tracks. Now, that's just a picture. It isn't even much of a story, but it's a picture that I found very vivid and have enjoyed. And all these stories, you see, would have been lost if there weren't an asker or a listener, someone who wanted to hear these stories. Today, I'd like to suggest that we go out and find stories, that we go out and find biographies. Don't be frightened by that word. Biography means to write down life. And you don't need to write down the whole life. You don't need to start out with, my grandfather was born at such and such, and then go through his life like an encyclopedia. Pick out the interesting stories that he will be delighted to tell you if you show some interest. You'll find there are people all over that have stories to tell. I suggest that you ask them for their stories, that you take a few notes, as they tell you, or else just listen. Figure that you're going to get lots of bright colored and interesting bits and pieces and scraps, like a patchwork quilt, that it doesn't need to be in any special order with a beginning and end. Suppose you don't have anybody to ask. Suppose your grandparents don't live near you or are dead. There are plenty of old people around. Our house is surrounded by nursing homes filled with lonely old people. You probably know some neighbors that are old people. You may go visiting somewhere where there's some old people. And then get them going. Now, it might help to have some questions to start with that will stimulate them to think. The professor that had his students go out and ask about the Depression asked these kind of questions. Do you remember the Depression? How old were you? Did it affect you and your family? What changes did it make in your daily life? And then here's where he got the most interesting answers. What's the best single incident that stands out in your mind and says depression to you? Here's a few of those answers. I went up to Flint, Michigan to try to get a job in one of the automobile factories in 1929. I was caught in crowds of as many as 2,000 men looking for jobs. You could just raise your feet off the ground and you'd go any way the crowd was going. Her grandmother said, we used to keep boarders. We had as many as six. I remember going to the store and being able to buy all the groceries that we would need for a week for $5, except for something like bread, which we might have to buy again in the middle of the week. Here's a man that was boiling even remembering. Then what really got my blood to boiling is that blasted doctor. He knew we didn't have any money because I told him when we first went in we didn't, but I was paying him just like I told him I would, 50 cents a month. Well, he started sending me all those letters telling me what he was going to do if I didn't pay him, and he kept adding on all those late charges, he called them. Well, finally I decided I'm going to walk to town, and when I see that doctor, I'm going to push that no-good doctor out of that upstairs window, and then he won't have to worry what I owe him. Funniest thing is that by the time I got to town, that blasted doctor was gone for the day, and I had to turn around and walk back home. Other papers that were brought in by the students told of generosity. That poor doctor, you see, his family was probably starving too. There were other doctors in these papers who did many services for many years without getting paid. But this is what you get. You get a mixed bag of all sorts of interesting stuff. I had two children in my class who had nothing to eat for 3 days but dandelion greens. One small boy in my classroom died, and I bought the clothing in which to bury him. I can remember an old man sitting in front of a building with tears streaming down his cheeks because he could not find work. My father took him groceries several times. He finally put a gun to his head and pulled the trigger. And here's a man who took some cattle to market. After the banks had closed, we needed some money to run on. We shipped the cattle by train after driving them into town with horses, and I usually rode in the caboose. Not a very clean or comfortable ride, but it was free. The train men were always nice. When I sold the cattle, I got the money in cash. Now, this is never a very safe thing to do, and in those days, it was even more foolhardy. People were knocked in the head for just a quarter or less. The commission men and I went into the restrooms, and they helped me to pin the money on the inside of my underwear, shirts, pants, and even in my socks. One of them went with me to the train. I never moved out of my seat on the train ride home, and I was really scared to death. But I got home all right, and then we had a little money to buy necessities. There will be other stories that you can get besides depression stories. Ask your parents. They're probably of an age to have been involved in the Second World War or the Korean War. What was life like at that time? Did they work in factories? What was rationing like? Was your father in the service? Where did he go? What were his adventures? And for anybody, you can ask, what sort of toys did you have to play with? What was your school like? Did you have a beloved pet? Do you have any stories about that pet? And especially good, I think, that old people enjoy telling courtship stories. Grandpa, how did you meet Grandma? If you've read Harriet the Spy, you'll recall that one of the funniest scenes in Harriet is where her mother tells how she met Harriet's father. There are some good things about doing this besides just learning how to write better. For instance, you're preserving somebody's history. If it's the history of your own family, it's especially valuable. Another thing is that you're going to learn to listen and that you're going to learn to ask. Another thing that you might discover, if you haven't already, is the pleasure of talking to an old person. I had known Grandma Vi for years, and I hadn't paid much attention to her. I had taken her for granted. I'd been interested more in other things. And one day, by chance, when she started telling a story about the lumber camp, I discovered what an interesting person she was, how much more there was to her, and that I had never given her a chance. You may want to keep it a secret if you're doing this for a school assignment. If the old people think you have to, they might not feel so free. What I really hope is that you won't have to, that nobody will say to you, go out and do this, and that you might do it because you would like to, because you want to. It might take a little courage, but I can't think of any way that you'd give more pleasure to an old person, and in doing so, get a lot for yourself. One final thing, if you're there at your desks right now and just itching to do some writing, there's another kind of biography that you can do right there at your desk, and that is autobiography. That's writing about yourself. And what you might try is to pretend that you are 75 years old and that your grandchild or your great-grandchild has come to you and is perched on the corner of your chair and is saying, Grandma or Grandpa, what was life like? What sort of toys did you play with? Did you go to such an old-fashioned school? TV? What's that? Try to tell what your life was like. And remember to put in all those Hiram details, because those are the things that make it fun. You won't have a great white pig, probably, but you'll have something else to tell your grandchild and make him or make her laugh and be interested.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.